season premiere of Ice Pilots NWT.
Well, I don't even remember being there that day.
Joe fights the feds.
It's a total intimidation.
Justin and his crew are stranded in the high Arctic.
All our circuit breakers blew last night.
With the plane frozen solid.
Minus 90.
Can the crew stave off disaster?
It's going to get worse because there's a blizzard coming.
I wish that I could fly into the sky, so very high, to anywhere I please. Oh, oh, oh yeah! I want to get away. I want to get away. I want to get away. I want to get away.
In the vast Canadian North, tiny settlements are scattered across the Barrens, isolated, cut off. Up here, many rely on one man to deliver their food and supplies.
So, Yanks, get home? Can I go slow?
Joe McBrien. Airman and chairman of Buffalo Airways, based in Yellowknife, Northwest Territories. Now in its 40th year, Joe's company flies planes from a bygone era. Powered by piston-driven engines, these planes were built before the jet age. Made to fight in World War II. Heavy. Powerful. Overbuilt. Designed to withstand shrapnel. They're the tanks of aviation. Now, their battlefield is the Arctic.
Oh, this piece of shit.
This is no place for the faint-hearted.
A little bit of smoke popping out of the exhaust. Black smoke. We are having engine issues.
Joe's young pilots face dangers they never dreamed of in flight school.
What the f*** are we landing on?
Icy airstrips. Blinding weather.
Terrain,
cold, and insane cold. Joe's mechanics tackle impossible repairs in the harshest conditions.
Temperature out here, Gord?
Minus 38.
Oxygen oil's like a minus 30.
I can't feel my feet.
But they keep the Buffalo fleet in top shape, no matter what.
Well, you don't have to join the Army or the Navy to get an experience like this. You just got to join Buffalo Airways.
Yeah, or text you know.
There's no other airline on Earth like Joe's.
Perfect. Off runway 27.
Buffalo is as original as this 65-year-old former Bush pilot who calls the shots.
Buffalo would not exist without my father. And there's no one in the 6 billion other people out there that could run it.
But it's a family business. In the Yellowknife hangar, Joe's sons Mikey and Rod scramble to keep up with their maverick dad.
It's these great, big, crazy ideas, and we all help them to make them happen. You know, just like we're following our leader. He's the general.
You can't dispatch an airplane until we get this sorted out. Somebody's got to be charged from start to finish. And they've got to show me they know how to do it.
I'm going to smear my personality around a little bit, and I'm going to take the rest of the day off. Those that don't like it can go on the bus. You see both of you guys?
This is a lot of stress for one man. He's just keeping it all together, just keeping the company flying.
And in the frigid Arctic, the odds are stacked against him. It's before dawn on the tarmac. One of Joe's DC-4 crews preps for an urgent mission. The captain for this run is Justin Simley. At 29, Justin already has thousands of hours of stick time.
This is fun flying.
He flies nearly every plane in the Buffalo fleet.
Hey, Justin.
Yes, sir.
Justin's become Joe's go-to pilot for the toughest jobs. And this is one of them. With a severe recession, Buffalo had to bid low to clinch this contract.
You had to jump on this one at a cost that we really had to look at. So it was a skinny margin for profit.
So skinny that if Justin can't complete the 2,900-kilometer trip in one day, the job will cost Buffalo money. They'll burn almost $40,000 of fuel alone. The mission calls for Justin and his crew to pick up an 8,000-pound generator in the hamlet of Joe Haven on the Arctic coast. And deliver it to Whale Cove on the shore of Hudson Bay. In the Arctic, there's no electrical grid linking settlements. The villages rely on big local generators to keep them alive. If the generators fail, a blackout can mean no heat and no light in the long, cold Arctic night.
What if I can get the airplane around and get it home and do the job safely? I'm happy.
It's 1,100 kilometers from Yellowknife to Joe Haven to pick up the generator, 700 kilometers from there to Whale Cove to deliver it, and 1,100 kilometers back home. That's a lot of flying in a single day. By the time the sun comes up, the DC-4 is well on the way to its first stop, Joe Haven. Justin's co-pilot today is Sean Berry, in his sixth year at Buffalo. The engineer on board is Adam Smith. He grew up at Buffalo. His late father was chief pilot. Grabbing a quick nap, the fourth member of the crew is ramp hand Andrew Veit.
Note the time, please.
Hit the pen.
It's been 3 hours since takeoff, and they're flying problem-free.
Let's see if anybody's alive out there.
Roger.
Joe Haven, the airport radio.
Roger, Joe Haven.
But just outside Joe Haven...
Look at that, 16 miles out of Joe, just outside of there.
The crew hits low-lying ice fog, a dense layer of ice crystals that completely obscures the Joe Haven airstrip.
When we reached the coast, we saw some fog, and at which time we called and got the weather from Arctic Radio.
Buffalo 5718, Arctic Radio, Joe Haven, 100-foot ceiling.
They advised us Joe Haven was severely reduced visibility.
Although they have instruments to guide them, they can't land unless they can see the runway from a minimum of 300 feet above.
Get in here, we're taking the outdoor runway 31 through the overhead.
1 mile, bearing 150.
Roger. See it down there, off the left.
Justin lowers the DC-4 into the fog to see if they can break through.
1.5 miles to the runway.
They're flying blind as they descend, hoping to get close enough to the ground for a clear view of the runway.
1 mile. Fog, man.
At 300 feet, Justin still can't break through the whiteout.
P-soup.
It's too risky to try to land. Justin throttles the DC-4 back up above the fog.
All right, well, let's start looking for an alternate voice. Let's get on the horn.
Arctic radio, Buffalo 5718.
Justin needs to find a nearby airstrip with clear visibility where he can land his big DC-4, and fast, before this mission becomes a bust. Whale Cove was once a self-sufficient Inuit community that lived off the land around Hudson Bay. Today, it depends on a steady supply of electricity. And now, it needs a backup generator to help it survive the brutal Arctic winter. But Buffalo Airways' mission to pick up the power unit and deliver it to Whale Cove has hit a major obstacle.
That is a terrible fog, man.
Thick ice fog, preventing the crew from landing at Joe Haven, where the generator awaits.
Well, that f***ing sucks.
DC-4 Captain Justin Simley could turn around and head back to Buffalo HQ, but that would mean giving up. So he scrambles for a plan B.
Well, let's start looking for an alternate, boys.
An alternate landing strip. With their limited fuel, they'll need to find somewhere close by.
Let's get on the horn. Let's get to Loyola Cambridge.
Arctic radio, Buffalo 5718.
Tulujuwuk, also known as Tuloyuwak, is 140 kilometers east of Joe Haven. Cambridge Bay is 370 kilometers away. But if the whole coast is socked in, Justin may have to abort this mission and head home.
17 Zulu, Tuloyuwak.
They receive a weather report for Tuloyuwak.
Visibility 1-5.
Clear skies.
Yeah, let's go to Tuloyuwak, okay, boys?
Unable to pick up the generator, they head empty-handed for Tuloyuwak and cross their fingers the delay will be short.
Gear down before landing checklist, please.
Gear down, Mike.
Down there.
Landing checks for completion.
Down there, thank you. Full flat.
Flat set.
Final checks.
Tuloyuwak, population 800, is above the 69th parallel. It's the northernmost community on the Canadian mainland. Up here, in minus 30, the engines will freeze solid in an hour, so the crew gets busy.
Plugging in the engines, ceramic heaters, and basically you can get a ceramic heater, one you have for your house. This is a little thing. You basically just put it inside the engine by the cylinders, and they'll keep them at, 20 degrees or so. And then plug in the oils as well. Little pin heaters in the oil tanks keep the oil nice and liquid.
Now all Justin and the crew can do is wait and hope the fog over Joe Haven, just a half hour away, clears very soon.
It's very important that we get it done in a timely fashion because that's what our customers have grown to expect.
This unscheduled pit stop has compromised the entire plan.
They missed Joe Haven on their first leg, and that right there put them behind. You burn a little extra fuel.
Inside the Tuloyuwak Airport Terminal, Justin and co-pilot Sean recalculate the fuel needs for the next legs of the mission.
120 miles is what we need.
Powered by piston engines, the DC-4 runs only on aviation gas, or avgas, unlike modern turbine-powered aircraft, which run on jet fuel.
20 drums it is. You cool with that?
Yep. Okay.
Their diversion has used up precious fuel, and there's no avgas available at Tuloyuwak.
Avgas for a DC-4 is always challenging to find in the north, especially as time goes on. It seems there's less and less of it shipped in.
Luckily, Justin has come prepared.
I chose to take 15 drums of aviation fuel with us in the aircraft.
The crew begins pumping avgas into the DC-4 wing tanks one drum at a time. It's a reality of flying vintage planes that use nearly obsolete gas. Pilots often carry extra drums of highly combustible fuel in the cargo hold.
Plan to go back to Joe Haven when the weather's good, load our generator, go to Whale Cove, drop it off, and that's if everything works out.
Soon, a lucky break.
Giddy up.
The fog has lifted over Joe Haven. They still have a good chance of getting the generator to Whale Cove by end of day, if nothing else goes wrong. Back in Yellowknife, boss Joe McBrien has a legal battle on his hands.
The hard part of dealing with transport is you deal at different levels.
He's been fined by government regulator Transport Canada and is meeting with his lawyer about fighting it.
So we got 27 passengers.
Meeting the 28th for the flight attendant.
Yes,
Buffalo has been charged with operating its scheduled DC-3 flight with too many passengers on board. Joe's daughter Kathy has come up from Hay River to help.
Transport Canada and our battles with them are always stressful.
Really, it would seem if you count souls on board, it'd be 28. But the plus one, the infant,
yeah,
it doesn't take a seat.
Well, I don't even remember being there that day, so I can't even help you.
Exactly. I mean, it's a really on system. They investigate, they make a decision, and then they impose a sentence with incomplete evidence, in my view, because they're judge and jury.
Maverick Joe thinks the feds look for reasons to come down hard on Buffalo.
It's an intimidation, a total intimidation. They do not treat us as working together. They treat us as if we're in a lockup and they're wearing the uniform.
What you're telling me is that a group of people were out to get you, and I think you've got a reasonable set of facts that would support that contention.
Joe's independent northern style has clashed with the southern bureaucracy for years, but he's developed a unique way of handling his frustrations.
People go out for therapy, they run, or they swim, or they crochet. I clean up cat shit. Especially, I like cleaning cat shit during Transport Canada safety audits. They send me all this hate mail about all the things I'm doing wrong. And I scoop it all up, and I read through it, and I sort out the good, and I sort out the bad, and I try and keep some of the old.
Meanwhile, Justin and his crew have left Tuloyuac and land as originally intended in Joe Haven to pick up the 8,000-pound generator.
Back up.
But with less than an hour of true daylight so far north this time of year, it's dark by early afternoon.
Hey guys. How are you guys doing? That's the question. Long day?
Yeah, it's turning into one, but you know.
They're 4 hours behind schedule. The crew will have to rush to get the generator on board if there's any hope of completing their delivery today. The pressure is on Justin to come through for Joe.
Moving these generators around, you know, I've been doing it for almost 10 years. It's not easy.
Just last winter, when the power went out at Rankin Inlet, Justin tried to fly an emergency generator to the community.
Whoa.
But he and his crew couldn't fit it on the DC-4.
This ain't gonna fly, boys. We can't get her in the floor here.
And the mission was scuttled.
I'm done with this generator tonight.
Justin is determined not to have that happen again.
It always will.
It's intense. There's a lot going on, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong. So your eyes have to be everywhere. You got to trust your crew, and everything's got to be right.
But everything is not right. They can't find a way to get it through the door.
Bring them in some more and then. Bring them on in. Comes in, straighten the tires. How's that door now?
Just missing.
Are we going to miss it? Okay.
The clock is ticking, and the generator is stuck halfway inside the plane.
No, it works.
Yeah, it can be pretty tricky for sure. It's inches and angles, man.
But Justin doesn't have an inch to spare.
He's got to come in straighter. This angle thing isn't working.
They back out the generator again and line it up for a third try.
Good. They're down an inch.
Down an inch.
Good.
This time, Adam uses the pallet jack to slide the generator on board.
This pallet jack may be at the end of this.
The crew ratchets the 8,000-pound generator into position in the cargo hold with the winch, chains, and rollers. After hours of effort in the freezing cold, it's securely in place. But now, it's too late to travel.
We were coming to the end of our duty day, and we were going to call her quits for the night.
The generator won't get to Whale Cove today as planned, leaving the community without a backup power supply. It's the only decision Justin can make, but Joe just wants it delivered on time.
On a trip like that, I'm not counting the margin. I'm counting it's a time-sensitive article that we're moving.
Justin and the crew put the DC-4 to bed in minus 40, it's vital to keep the plane's four engines warm overnight.
We tested the heaters. The heaters had been working for 3 hours. We had the oil heaters plugged in the 30-amp breakers. We had the ceramic heaters for the front plugged in the 20-amp breakers, and everything was working fine.
But when Justin wakes up the next morning, his nightmare continues.
Everything's frozen. Engines, batteries, inside.
Morning in Joe Haven in the high Arctic. A tiny settlement on King William Island in the middle of endless ice and pounding winds. At breakfast, Buffalo Airways Captain Justin Simley has just dropped a bombshell on his DC-4 crew.
Our heaters seem to have stopped working last night on the airplane, so the airplane is frozen.
Their mission yesterday was to deliver an 8,000-pound generator to Whale Cove, 700 kilometers away, and be back in Yellowknife last night. But weather scuttled that plan. Now this.
Everything's frozen. Engines, batteries, inside. Everything's frozen.
Basically, now you got a 70,000-pound ice cube.
They thought they had it covered. Last night, the crew placed electric ceramic heaters in each engine compartment and plugged in electric probes in the oil tanks to keep the oil above 0 degrees. But overnight, the circuit breaker for the oil probes blew.
Of course, if you're going to plug in a four-engine airplane to a chintzy old circuit breaker, of course it's going to blow.
So we're going to have to go gather some heaters and get the airplane unplugged.
It won't be easy warming over 300 liters of frigid oil so that it flows properly in the DC-4's four engines.
Out here on this trip, it is 30, 40 below, and coming out here with the wind chill, this is a new experience, and it's freaking cold.
The crew springs into action. They manage to borrow two frost fighters, heaters usually used to warm up the plane's interior, not defrost engines that are frozen solid. The crew will blow heat on the engine cylinders and oil tanks in an attempt to raise the oil temperature enough to make the oil more fluid. Risking a cold start when engine oil is thick as glue could deprive thousands of moving parts of lubrication, causing the engine to seize up.
A cold start has oil starvation. The oil doesn't flow to the main bearings in the engine, and you're just playing with the time bomb now.
But there's a snag right off the bat. One of the frost fighters won't start. With only one working heater, Justin doesn't stand a chance. Back in the cozy comfort of the Buffalo hangar, word of Justin's problems hit the floor.
I don't think anybody's got any good news.
Buffalo's veterans are shaking their heads at this one.
I've been working in the Arctic now for over 27 years. And the best friend you have when you go up north is called a Herman Nelson.
A Herman Nelson is a diesel-fired heater that blasts air hot enough to bake a cake.
Like, there's a difference between a frost fighter and a Herman Nelson. Herman Nelson will put the heat out like 400 degrees if you know what you're doing, eh?
Problem is, Justin didn't bring one, or a ground power unit to help start the airplane.
I didn't take Herman Nelson and a power unit because I had three new engines on the airplane. I didn't know how much fuel they were going to burn. Instead of taking Herman and a power unit, I took five extra drums of aviation fuel in case we needed it.
With three new overhauled engines, fuel burn rates can be hard to predict. Still,
if I was going, the choice would be to Herman Nelson.
You don't want to rely on other people's equipment, but, you know, you don't want to run out of gas either.
Justin finally gets the frost fighter working, but using a frost fighter to thaw frozen engines is like trying to cook a hot dog with a lighter.
Frost fighters are just, they're like a lukewarm heater.
Does any pilot ever think he makes a mistake? No. Justin probably wishes he would have brought a heater. But he may not think he made a mistake, I'm not sure.
You know, we haven't had any good trips in quite a while because the economy's been so slow. The first trip turns into a total disaster.
Justin is stuck in the high Arctic with only two borrowed frost fighters at his disposal. It'll take him and his crew all day to find out whether they can loosen up the engines enough to start.
Wait, wait, wait.
Later in Yellowknife, word of the problem reaches Joe.
My father, growing up in the North, basically was a one-man show when it came to aircraft, so he was fully responsible. He wasn't too happy that the airplane froze up.
No, I've never frozen up an airplane. Because it's like a farm. What you do at night is what you get in the morning. So I make sure the cows are all inside the fence before I go to sleep.
The golden rule of the Arctic, they broke it. They didn't take their backup system.
I wouldn't have left the ground without it myself. I was appalled to find out they didn't have it on board. If you don't have a backup, you don't have a plan. Yeah, I mean, that's a sacrilege. That's like peeing in a church or swearing at the mass. So you don't do that kind of stuff. You don't go to the Arctic without your winter gear.
He just can't stand the fact that we said we were going to do something, and for no real good reason did we get it done properly.
I mean, that's kind of a joke. I mean, the amount of experience we have, it's like polar bear that can't swim.
So cigarettes, you smoke them when you need them, eh?
Only when pilots piss me off.
But there's little Joe can do, and things are getting even worse for Justin.
Looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better. There's a blizzard coming from the Cambridge area. It's coming at us at about 30 knots, so we're going to get some high winds tonight. We're going to have to leave the heaters on all night, and then we'll just cycle the heaters through each engine, like one heater for 1 hour on each engine.
Justin wrangles a small generator and fuels it up to get some power to the plane and charge its onboard batteries.
The heating pad right there, get nice and warm. We're going to keep the side of the batteries all toasty warm.
What we did is we took our time. We thawed the engines and made sure we weren't going to damage them in starting, because the last thing you want to do is take off out of Joe Haven and have an engine failure on rotation or something like that.
After hours of pumping lukewarm air into the engines, a sign of progress.
Yeah, it's warming up.
Justin is able to move one of the propellers. But taking off to Whale Cove tonight is still out of the question. Any chance of making a profit on this charter is now officially dead. Justin and the crew will have to keep heating the plane through the night. But can they stay awake to make sure the engines don't freeze again? It's 40 below in the middle of the night on the Arctic coast. Buffalo Airways DC-4 Captain Justin Simley catches a few minutes of shut-eye in the airport lounge while the other crew members babysit the airplane.
Well, we're getting a little closer.
To keep it from turning into a giant icicle like it did last night. They can't afford to have that happen again.
We all decided to stay at the terminal and just alternate the shifts.
Have a good night.
And monitoring engine temperatures.
Number three is about zero. Number two is about, I don't know, minus 10 now. And one is just a dip below zero. So we're trying to keep them at zero or above right now.
The crew must keep the oil in all four engines above 0 degrees Celsius to have any hope of starting their frozen DC-4. Adam and Sean borrow a local truck to get food.
I spent $119 on groceries to last me in the night, because we're in the middle of nowhere called Joe Haven. This is where the Franklin Expedition wintered, though.
Joe Haven was the last known location of the Lost Franklin Expedition. In 1850, Franklin and his men sailed on to their deaths from starvation and possible lead poisoning. And 50 years later, Norwegian polar explorer Roald Amundsen wintered in his ship, the Joe, in this harbor for almost 2 years, just before he navigated what Franklin was looking for, the elusive Northwest Passage. When Adam and Sean return to keep watch, Andrew finishes his shift and heads back to the terminal with a report for Justin.
Justin, what's that? All the engines that are holding their heat above zero. The oils, except for number two.
When you get on these jobs, it's just you and your crew and your airplane. And that's all you got.
That's brisk, baby.
Once we got the engines warmed up, then the trick overnight was to keep them warm enough to start in the morning by maintaining their heat.
If Justin tries to start the four engines when they're below 0 degrees Celsius and the oil is thick, he could wreck them in an instant.
Just checking to see if the cylinder heads are warm or not. Number one is still pretty good, still pretty loose, but number two is starting to cool down on us.
So Justin and the crew move a Frostfighter heater from the number four engine that's holding temperature to the number two engine that needs to be brought back up. They've been doing this dance all night.
Turn the up, like minus 90.
Took turns swapping the heaters around and monitoring the temperatures and pulling the tents in the Arctic, and those temperatures and that wind is tough work.
And risky. At minus 40, exposed skin freezes in seconds. But to have any chance of delivering their cargo, an 8,000-pound generator, in the morning, they've got to keep the engines above freezing.
We'll run it on two for an hour and then switch it over to one. That's good, Ed.
The DC-4 crew never expected to see one morning here, let alone two. They've made it through the bitter winter night of blowing winds and minus 40 temperatures, but have the engines.
Number one first. We'll start number one, then we'll go to... Holy f***. You got frostbite yet? Once we have all engines started, somebody's going to have to pull the tail post up.
Ready?
Situation could be a lot worse. We survived the night. 30-knot winds. Arctic blizzard. Not a lot of fun. Managed to keep the airplane warm enough to start, so... Still blowing like a bastard out there, but this is gonna work.
It better. If the engines don't start, Justin will be out of options. Comes engine three. It starts, no problem.
We're in good shape. Cylinder head temperatures, we've had one, three, and four started. We're waiting on two.
Engine number two is the coldest engine. Kicks in. Justin has all four engines roaring. An amazing recovery from 24 hours ago.
Justin had to make sure that those engines were warm enough to start. I mean, they wouldn't have been coming home. They wouldn't have finished the trip. It would have went from bad to really, really bad.
Really bad, as in four seized up engines on a crippled plane 1,000 kilometers from home. But Justin was careful.
Okie dokie. Part breaks that line up there.
Now the DC-4 is ready to roll.
Down the top.
At last, they leave Joe Haven on their way to the waiting community of Whale Cove.
DC, rotate. Let's just hold on for a sec. Oh, this wants to go. Gear up.
But their mission to deliver the generator isn't over yet.
I've been here since 20 to 12.
Still upset at Justin for the DC-4 freeze-up in the Arctic, Joe's in a prickly mood in the Yellowknife hangar.
Nomad came in today and it wasn't a good scene. It was pretty rough.
What are they doing in LFR?
Since Justin's charter is still not back, Joe's directing his frustration at Mikey about a maintenance mix-up in the hangar.
Can you quit screaming in your phones? I can hear you.
And he flips right out because with the 15 minutes I was gone, they took PNR and the hangar to put WZS in.
PNR and WZS are the call numbers for two of Buffalo's DC-3s.
WZS is in the hangar. PNR is not in the hangar. Have you been to work today?
He came in all guns a-blazing, accusing me of not being at work and not knowing what was going on.
And who makes that decision?
Mikey rushes back to the hangar to sort things out and gets in the line of fire. Joe is tough to please, but that's how he's kept Buffalo flying safely for 40 years.
He's got such a reputation for being so volatile and so mean and stuff like that. And I've seen him make grown men cry.
It's how it is here. It's just the slightest thing will set him off.
With the economy in the doldrums and his business down, Joe's stress level is high.
I believe it's a whole thing about it being slow right now. There's no real work.
It's his planes, his company, and I mean, think about the stress that he'd be under. How many aircraft flying around the Arctic, how many young pilots, and then he's got, you know, 200 employees. He's worried about their jobs, worried that he's going to find work for them, worried about their families.
And having a charter that's now costing him money by running 2 days behind schedule isn't helping. It's all on Joe's shoulders.
I think that the wrong name for Buffalo is Buffalo, and it should be called Joe. And then people would understand a little bit better.
Meanwhile, further north, the waylaid DC-4 charter seems to be back on course.
Joe Haven at 1745, request for the latest Whale Cove weather.
It's headed for Whale Cove on the western shore of Hudson Bay with a new generator for the settlement. Frostbitten and exhausted, the pilots finally have the Whale Cove runway in sight.
On the end. On the end. On throttles now. All the mixtures. Balance are too good. Mixtures cut.
23 back up now.
23 back up.
Well done, Sean. Good
run.
5720, check you down at 2003. Welcome to Whale Cove.
The crew wastes no time tenting the engines, but there's nowhere to plug them in, so they're going to cool down quickly. By the time the engines are covered, dusk descends over the tarmac and the temperature plunges. The tired crew has no more than 1 hour to get the 8,000-pound generator off the plane before the engines freeze up again. It's a race against time and the cold.
Hey, everybody!
But Justin needs to keep his head. He directs two loaders simultaneously to ease out the generator. It's a tight squeeze, and there is no room for error.
Came in lengthwise, picked it up, positioned the other loader to suspend the piece when it came out. You hook the generator up to the first loader that's going to pull it out the door on an angle, and you position the second loader to catch it as it comes out the door.
A fumble in the transfer from one forklift to the other could send the 8,000-pound generator crashing to the ground.
Because you're putting cold steel onto cold steel, there's always the potential to have the generator slide off the forks. You can damage the airplane pretty badly if you screw this up, so it's got to be right.
Slow, careful process. But with the engines getting colder by the minute, there's no time to waste. Finally, mission accomplished. The people of Whale Cove have a backup generator to keep the lights burning.
We had a few bumps along the road, but at the end of the day, job got done, and it got done safely. And that's what we're all about.
But Justin's problems are far from over. He's about to go head-to-head with Buffalo Joe.
There's no defense.
The It's the day of reckoning for the DC-4 crew, just back from delivering a generator 2 days late.
We planned for 1 day. It took 3 days. You can imagine that's a lot more overhead than we planned.
Pilots Justin Simley and Sean Barry have been called into a meeting with Buffalo Joe. And everyone expects sparks to fly.
I get paid to make tough decisions. Sometimes the guy that signs my paycheck isn't happy with him.
He went down his street, now I get to go down mine. And we're both one-way streets. We're all present.
We got everybody into the room. Everyone was kind of tense, waiting for the old man to flip out.
You cannot, at this time of year, go in the Arctic without a plan. And the backup plan. It's like me saying, okay, did you got your parka? You got your boots? You got your mitts? You got your ear flaps? You got dry ones? You got an extra change of clothes when you get wet? You got some dry socks? But you got to think about this. You're going to get yourselves killed out there. Froze to death.
I'm not very happy when that kind of thing happens with my airplane and our name on it, sitting on an Arctic airport, frozen.
How did the decision come not to take Herman Nelson to GPU? The airplane's got to have it. The word I get on the phone is we couldn't take it because of our landing weight at Wilco. You want to take 180-pound Herman Nelson, throw Francis overboard, whatever his name is, Andrew. He's 180 pounds. There's your... Herman Nelson.
Yeah, I mean, I respect Joe's opinion. Okay, he spent 40 years building this company, and it hasn't been from sitting on his hands.
Justin's strategy of just staying quiet and listening is the only way you can get through the meeting. Like, I mean, there was no other option.
How can you make good decisions when the shit's against the wall? When you're 24 hours late, you're cold, you're tired, fatigued from trying to keep that airplane warm. You can't make good decisions in a cold airplane.
Instead of him yelling and screaming like usual, I think he said, hey, how can we make this better?
That next day, he did a great job of getting the airplane out of there, and getting over there and getting the job done. But it's not under the conditions you should be flying under, right?
I relied on them to do it. I didn't personally go out and walk on board the airplane and count the EBCs and see if they had everything. But ultimately, I'm responsible.
Joe knows what it's like on the front lines and how pilots can get into trouble.
You guys got to guarantee me that you will not leave Yellowknife after September without Herman Nelson and GPU. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
I'll probably be more aware and be more involved in when they put all the equipment together to go out and do a job.
Yeah, I know.
Joe's flown the Arctic for almost half a century, and he wants his pilots to fly that long, too. On the next episode of Ice Pilots NWT, a fire alarm on the C-46, 4,000 feet up, and no way out.
It's only a matter of time. Metal, magnesium, everything burns.
So how many buildings have burnt down?
A Christmas disaster sends Kelly into action.
Welcome back to holy
and a high-altitude emergency. Engine failure in midair.